Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States, and in more than 120 countries daily, worldwide, over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on privacy when we come back. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership, private property, and private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? Bonds are the exact opposite to private property. Public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights, and permits are the exact opposite to private business. And why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, your liberty, and your property from these incessant attacks by government and government agencies like OSHA and the EPA and the State Tax Commission and Zoning and Planning and the IRS and the swarms of government agents and agencies who are eating out your substance? Well, you know, there's a lot that we can do, and the first step is to inform ourselves as to the legal alternatives that we have between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about private business, why don't you call and order a free general law CD package first, and let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about this thing called private business. Remember, it's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. When you get there, click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Hey, did you ever notice how your president and your representatives, when they're talking on the TV, they always tell you exactly what it is you want to hear? For instance, Tim Gaither, he was on the other day, and he said that the government policy promotes a strong dollar. At the very same time that our government is putting out $1.5 trillion a year into our economy, inflating our currency by $1.5 trillion a year. At the same time that we look back over 1930 to 2000 and watch the disintegration of the dollar from 100 cents in 1930 to 97 or 3 cents. We lost 97% of it in that period of time, 70 years or 80 years. Did you ever notice that they tell you what you want to hear and then they do the exact opposite from that? Let me show you another one here. We want to protect people's privacy. And I'm going to show you today, yeah, then they gave us the Patriot Act and Homeland Security so that when we go into an airport, we can let them look up our hind ends and take our shoes off and inspect us like we're a side of beef going down the line to be cut up for hamburger. And then we want to cut spending. Have you heard that one? The politicians are constantly telling you about cutting spending. And then the exact opposite occurs. They spend more than they take in. They increase spending. They come up with new plans to spend more money. They can't spend it fast enough. They told us what we wanted to hear. Strong dollar, protect people's privacy. We want to cut spending. Then they told us, remember Bush did back in 2003, he said, we want to give you a tax cut. That wasn't a tax cut, it was a tax increase. By cutting the rates, what happened was you took your deductions and you triggered the alternative minimum tax in the very next year. The federal government took in 10% more money in tax than they did the year before. The year after, they initiated the Bush tax cuts. The federal government took in 10% more money because it triggered the alternative minimum tax. The Bush tax cuts did not cut our taxes. It increased our taxes by 10%. But they told us what we wanted to hear. And then finally in the Bible, there's a statement in Jeremiah that says, peace, peace, when there's no peace. When you hear these politicians come to you and say, peace is about to break out in the world, peace, peace, when there is no peace, you'll know that war is at the door. So they tell us, we want a strong dollar, we want to protect your privacy, we want to cut spending, we want to cut your taxes, and there's peace, peace, and we got two wars as a result of it. So now that ought to tell us something. It tells us that when the government tells us A, we can expect Z, the exact opposite. So if you want to know what your politician really has in mind, listen to what he has to say, look at the other side of the coin, and then that's what he's going to do. Now, that being the case, listen to Bill Clinton. He said, finally, the operation appears to be at odds with the Clinton administration's recent push to make privacy a priority. Last month, Clinton called on banks and other financial institutions to give consumers more control over how their information is gathered and used. President Clinton believes that consumers deserve notice and choice about the use of their personal information, said a White House memo about the event. So when these proposals were being made that we just covered in yesterday's program, Uncle Sam has all of your numbers. Remember we were talking about the government now has a centralized database in which they take all the information from your 15 files, centralize that so that they know how many stocks you've got and bonds, and they know your social security number, and they know your marital status, and you haven't paid your child support, and they know where you're working so that they can lien your check. You know, that's not privacy. But here's the president. After he signs this into law, he comes out and then he says to you, well, we want to preserve, we want to protect your privacy. No. Government has never wanted to preserve or protect our privacy. Not from George Washington until last night at 5 o'clock have I ever seen any historical evidence that government wanted to protect your privacy. Our founding fathers did, and they put it into our Constitution. It's called the Fourth and Fifth Amendments, and government has been working overtime, night and day, to figure out new ways to end run around or circumvent the Fourth and Fifth Amendments. Now, that's the duty and that's the reality of government. That's what they've been doing. So they do the exact opposite. Now, let me tell you a story as to how this comes down, how they use this against us. Back in the 1960s, I'm going to say 68, 69, 70, along in there, there was an anti-war movement going on in the United States. It was a reaction against the Vietnam War. Many people in the country had a belly full of that war, and so they were protesting against it. Well, anyway, in the Bay Area, there's a college there. It's the University of California at Berkeley, and it's full of communists and fellow travelers and left-wing leaning radicals and screwballs and, you know. But, you know, they're all Americans, and they all have rights, and they're out on the streets, and they're protesting the war. Well, that didn't fit in with either Johnson or Nixon's view of the war, or the World Bank, you know, or the Bank for International Settlements, or the central banks of the world, or the powers that be, or the Illuminati, or anybody else. They wanted that war, and by God, we're going to have it. Well, anyway, the people are getting uppity about it. And so in order to protect Americans from these anti-war radicals, the government comes into the game under the guise of protecting us. I wasn't having any problem. I lived there in Oakland, California. I wasn't having any problems with these Berkeley radicals. I didn't sympathize with them. I did not agree with them. I never went to their meetings. And if you would have asked me, I'd have said, well, I'm in favor of snuffing them out, but, you know, they've got rights. No, that was my view. But they weren't causing me any grief. They weren't blowing up my house. They weren't knocking on my door, calling me on the telephone, or I mean, I had more problems with the Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses than I had with the anti-war protesters. All right, so some time goes by, and one day we're reading in the paper how these radical anti-war demonstrators had set off a bomb in San Francisco Bay. But fortunately, the government, Johnny on the spot, roared in and arrested the perpetrators, and they found that it was a cell. They found that it was a group of anti-war protesters, dangerous radicals, they called them. See, they hadn't come up with the word terrorists, yeah. They were dangerous radicals and arrested them. And there was 32 in this cell. They used the word cell as if it was a part of a bigger operation. They just got one cell out of this beehive, and there's a lot more cells out there. But fortunately, we got this one cell in Berkeley. And so the San Francisco Examiner and the Oakland Tribune and the Chronicle, they heralded the police and the highway patrol and how they had saved Americans' lives and blah, blah, blah. Now, here's what actually happened. After the trial was completed and the story came out, you know, 2-3 years later, and the appeals had run their gauntlet, we found out that this was a black flag operation in which the government created this crime, created this whole operation, and took credit for smashing it. And then they were saving us from this cell of radicals. Now, in law, we call this entrapment. Here's the way the deal came down. It is true that there were 32 members, and they were college kids and college teachers, professors, and so on, that belonged to this group. And they were sitting around, they were having their meetings in this guy's garage there in Berkeley. And so the government got wind of it, and so they sent a highway patrolman, a California highway patrolman, in to infiltrate this cell and to find out what's going on, which I'm not sure that that's bad politics or that's bad business for the government to keep track of, you know, public meetings. These people were advertising in the public and saying, come to our meeting and come and learn about the Vietnam War and blah, blah, blah. You know, well, after all, we're at war, and we got men over there getting killed and one thing and another. And so the highway patrolman comes in, and he listens to the meeting. He goes back, makes his report. And so the government decided, whoever these government officials are, that this was a dangerous radical cell that needed to be destroyed. We need to destroy it. We need to break this cell up. And so they went to work. They hatched a plan. So they gave the highway patrolman money. He comes into the cell, and he says, hey, listen, I like what you people are doing. I like what I hear. And I want to grease the skids. And so he comes in here with $15,000. That was their original seed money, $15,000, and gives it to the treasurer of this little group and says, you know, with my compliments, if there's anything I can do to help you, you know, let me know. Well, naturally, this little group with $15,000, now they're cranking out leaflets and advertising more, and God, they're just happy as clam at high tide. They ultimately voted this guy in as their treasurer. Isn't that special? Well, after all, he's furnishing the money, I guess he ought to keep track of it. Huh? And so he keeps putting money into this little cell, and they're cranking out leaflets. Now, you'd think the government would want to, if they want to stamp this out, they wouldn't give him any money, right? No. They give him money. And so this guy, he's in thick with him, and he notices, and he gets to be buddies with all 32 members of the group. And he finds this one guy over here, kind of a loner guy, kind of a ding-a-ling, you know, a hanger-on, a dinghy. And so he goes over, he befriends him, they go out and have a few beers together, and they get to chit-chatting one thing and another. And the highway patrolman now, the undercover government agent, suggests to this guy that they need to do something dramatic to get the public's attention. And the highway cop says, you know, if we were to explode a bomb, and this guy objected to that. He said, that's violence. And he says, I'm opposed to violence. I'm not wanting to kill people. I want to stop the Vietnam War because it's killing people on both sides. See, this guy's a pacifist. So the highway patrolman says, oh, no, we're not going to blow this up and kill people. We're going to draw attention to our cause. So let's go buy some dynamite and let's blow it up out on the mudflat. Now, in those days, when you went down the freeway, if you were southbound, for instance, on the bay side of the freeway, it was just a mudflat. There weren't any buildings out there like there are today. It was just mudflats. And so this young fellow, he said, well, that's a pretty good idea. So the highway patrolman fixes him up and shows him where to buy the dynamite and how to wire it up and do all the stuff. I mean, this kid couldn't light off a firecracker, you know, on the 4th of July without directions. And so they go out here. Now, the highway patrolman doesn't participate in the actual explosion. See, that's against the law for him to do that. So he didn't do that. But he sets this guy up and shows him how to do it. And this guy goes out. I don't know if he did it alone or if he did it with another buddy, but he goes out and he sets this explosion off on the mudflats. And boy, did that get people's attention. Boy, that got things really stirred up and really excited. Newspaper reported on it. Anti-war demonstrations become violent and blah, blah, blah. The very next day, the Highway Patrol, the FBI, the BATF, everybody gets in on this. And they descend on this guy's house, and they've got a search warrant, and they go in there, and they find all of this dynamite and caps and fuse, and, you know, all the paraphernalia for making this bomb. They arrest this guy. They go further. Now they arrest all the rest of them for conspiracy. The rest of the people in here, as the trial proceeds along, didn't know anything about what the highway patrolman and this loner guy over here is doing. And they didn't know anything about the bomb over here. But since this guy comes to the meetings and these people are all associated with him, they arrest them for conspiracy. They arrest him for the bomb, and they charged a bunch of the others, you know, with the bomb. But then later on, they had to drop those charges because they didn't know and didn't have anything to do with it. This is called a black flag operation. This is your government coming in here to eliminate and stifle free speech, which our Constitution provides for this. Now, here again, you know, you and I may not agree with these people. We may not like them, but, you know, that's what free speech is all about. These guys have a right to say things that you don't like. But, you know, conversely, you have a right to say things that they don't like. You know, as long as we're friendly about it and respect each other's right to free speech, the system's been working pretty good for the last couple hundred years. But the government can't stand free speech. Absolutely can't stand it. They want to control speech. We saw that yesterday and the day before. That a public school, for instance, is not a place for free speech and an exchange of ideas. That's controlled speech. Education is where we have an exchange of ideas. Indoctrination is what government's all about. That's why they take you into the army and they indoctrinate you, young fellows there in the army. You're not there to talk about right and wrong and good and bad and morality versus immorality. It's like the sodomy thing over here. Nobody's asking you guys in the army over here what you think about serving with sodomites. They're just imposing it upon you, and you're going to do it and shut up. So anyway, the trial goes on. It takes a couple, 3 years for the trial to go on, you know. But it comes to the end over here, and then it comes out that this bomb idea was the idea of the highway patrolman and that this was a case of entrapment. It was the government's idea to set off a bomb. It was the highway patrolman. It wasn't anybody in the cell or the group. Those people are all pacifists, remember? But it broke up the group. It shut their mouths, and they never assembled again. They were fighting for their lives to stay out of prison. And then they spent their treasure defending themselves against the government and their unlimited taxpayer prosecution. Now, just look around you today. Anything like that going on around you today? Take a look at this shoe bomber and this Christmas underwear bomber. And then this latest one, it was the Times Square bomber. None of those three bombs went off. And I think you're going to find out as time progresses along, especially with the newest one up here in Portland, Oregon, that whole thing was orchestrated by the FBI. Orchestrated. Now, the government has to be careful when they orchestrate these that they don't get caught in entrapment. And the agents are well-versed in entrapment. that you can rest assured, so that when this thing comes off, it's not the government entrapping these people. These are crazies, and we're protecting you from these terrorist attacks. Well, let me tell you how this is coming down. The terrorists are winning the war, hands down. Hands down. And as far as war, there isn't any war. there isn't even any opposition. The terrorists have us on the run, and we're fleeing when none pursues. Take a look at that. You'll see it in Leviticus 26. God said, you will flee at the shaking of a leaf when there's nobody pursuing you. That's what's going on today. Now take a look at the Twin Towers over there. That was a black flag operation, I think. About two-thirds of us now know that. There's only about a third of us that are still arguing over whether or not the Trade Towers were a black flag operation or not. But think about what's going on here. We're involved in two wars, and we've spent $1 trillion. $1 trillion. Now, it's true we're over there killing those Taliban fighters, and we're over there jumping up and down, hooping and hollering, stirring up a lot of dust and hate and discontent and doing all those things, but we're spending ourselves into bankruptcy, and that's the objection. That's the objective here. We want to spend America into bankruptcy so that we can merge it into this new world order, so they have to destroy us. And that's what's coming down. And God warned us about that, our Creator. He said, hey, wake up. Smell the coffee here. Let me show you how this is coming down. That's what Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28 are all about. It's a black flag operation. And take a look at Normandy. When D-Day occurred, we lost more Americans dead on the beaches of Normandy the first day of the war than in Iraq and Afghanistan combined. A pittance. In World War I, there were three battles in which 40,000 Allied soldiers were killed in a single day. Now, the blood and treasure that's being spent is propaganda money. In the McNeil Lair NewsHour, PBS NewsHour, about every night, they'll have pictures of the dead over there. They kill about four or five a week. In World War II, boys and girls, the biggest, you know, the big one, WW2, they killed as many people in a single day as has been killed in this whole Afghan war combined. You couldn't put all those pictures up there on the walls. And that's to inflame us. That's to keep us, you know, front and center. Hey, we're fighting terrorism here. We're not fighting terrorism over here. What we're doing is destroying the American economy and merging the United States into a new world order. And in the process of that, we're losing our privacy. They're taking our privacy away from us. Not that the average American really cares. The average Joe Sixpack, he doesn't have any privacy. He never has had. He doesn't know what the hell it's all about. He couldn't care less. The few people in America that are concerned about their privacy, I think, would probably fit in a moderate city of 30,000. Might even lose them in there. Now, with that said, let's take a look here at the Patriot Act and the Attention Deficit Democracy, an article written by James Bovard. He said, the American political system failed when Congress and the media recently rolled over in favor of extending the most onerous provisions of the USA Patriot Act, despite stark evidence of both the law's abuses and the widespread popular opposition. Bush got a rubber stamp extension of a law that has come to symbolize boundless government intrusions since 9/11. The reenactment of the Patriot Act symbolizes how America is becoming an attention deficit democracy, characterized by pervasive negligence and ignorance throughout society and much of the government. Most Americans appear to no longer care whether there is any leash on government power or not. Many Americans did try to stop this juggernaut. More than 400 cities and communities have passed resolutions condemning or opposing the Patriot Act. And yet Senator Russ Feingold, Democrat of Wisconsin, an opponent of the bill, perfectly captured what Congress did. What we're seeing is quite simply a capitulation to the intransigent and misleading rhetoric of a White House that sees any effort to protect civil liberties as a sign of weakness. Now, I want you to notice here in the latest election, here was a guy that was opposed to the Patriot Act. He voted him out. Okay, get rid of that guy. The Founding Fathers intended Congress to be a vigorous check on the balance to executive power. But Congress has never done anything more than concoct fig leaves for itself in response to public outrage over the Patriot Act. In late 2004, Congress mandated the creation of the Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board, but the board is totally controlled by the branch of government committing the abuses. The president appoints all five board members, and the board is located in the White House. Bush dallied before announcing his picks, and then appointed as chairman the former co-chair of lawyers for Bush Cheney. The board never bothered to hold a single meeting. With the Patriot Act renewal, Congress made what Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Arlen Specter, Republican of Pennsylvania, described as cosmetic changes, and then congratulated themselves for defending civil liberties. With the revised Patriot Act, it will be more difficult for the feds to seize public library records with a Section 215 search warrant approved by the Secret Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. That's a court. But the feds will still be able to seize library records by invoking other provisions in the law. Businesses, nonprofit groups, and other organizations hit by Section 215 search warrants are prohibited from disclosing that they have been compelled to surrender customers' information and other data to the feds. So here's what comes down. Let's suppose that the feds come in and they want your tax records. And here's a story that came down one time when I was in the contracting business. The contractor's licensing board called me one day and said, "Hey, how come you don't have a contractor's license?" And so when I got that body buried, I was talking to Don Watkins, and he says, "Oh, well, the government comes in here and they audit us twice a year. And what they're looking for is guys like you that are out here buying $30,000, $50,000 a year worth of sinks and building materials here and don't have a license. And so then they catch you guys." And I said, okay, now I see how that works. It isn't that the government is interested in auditing Thriftway Lumber Company because they think that maybe they're not paying all their taxes. They're auditing Thriftway Lumber Company because they have connections with their customers. And then they can go to their customers. No, the IRS does it. And then the state tax commission, the sales tax people do it. They're all sharing this information back and forth. What they're looking for is taxes. They're not concerned at all. Here, you know, about contractors being licensed or unlicensed. That's the ruse. We're protecting the public from these unlicensed contractors, as if my customers were calling them up every day complaining about my behavior. Now, remember that when government is seeking regulation, they're not seeking regulation to further or enhance or to protect you, the consumer. They're seeking to stifle competition. All regulation is designed for is to eliminate competition. Period. It's the end of the report. And if you think that it's there to protect consumers or something like that, you got your head up your hind end. That's the bottom line. Now, the government justifies all this in the name of the public good. You know, we're out here protecting you from this cell of radical anti-war protesters here. Well, now, if the people of America don't want to fight a war in Vietnam, you know, why not just take a vote? Hey, how many of you people in America want to continue the war in Vietnam? They could have put that on the ballot, you know, right there in 1972, couldn't they? Well, they could have put that on the ballot in 1968 and said, "Hey, all of us in favor of continuing the war, let's vote for Lyndon Johnson or Hubert Humphrey or, you know, whoever, and let's put our X right here, and let's suppose that the majority said, now let's terminate this war, we've had enough of it." Then we could say, well, the people of America are fed up with it and they don't want to fight it anymore. Then we could quit. Better quit 4 years early. Wouldn't have made any difference. I mean, you lost the war in 1975. You could have lost the war in 1968 and saved a lot of money in the process, couldn't you? So that's the way that game comes down. So now that you're alerted to that, and there's lots of information out here, it isn't something new or off the wall, it isn't something that I dreamed up. I just wanted to pass it on to you. And here's what's going on. Going on here, he says, now, businesses, nonprofit groups, and other organizations hit by Section 215 search warrants are prohibited from disclosing that they have been compelled to surrender this customer information and other data to the feds. So in the old days, Don Watkins could tell me, hey, it's the feds. They came in here to audit my records and books, and that's why you're having all this grief. Now they can't even tell me that. It's a top secret. And if he were to tell me that and the feds found out about it, they'd come prosecute him under the Patriot Act. Now, this new Improved Patriot Act will allow individuals and organizations hit by such searches to publicly complain about the intrusion, but only after they wait a year, after they have been searched, and only if they can persuade a federal judge that the G-men acted in bad faith. A 365-day waiting period is Congress's notion of due process and fair play for American citizens. Not special. And the biggest Patriot Act bombshell of recent times detonated last November when the Washington Post revealed that the FBI is issuing 30,000 national security letters a year. The Patriot Act made it far easier for the FBI to use these NSLs to compel private citizens, banks, nonprofits, and other entities to surrender information upon demand. They don't need a warrant. They just come in and say, here's this NSL letter. Give us this information. Totally bypassing your Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights. Now, these subpoenas, like Section 215 searches, are accompanied by a gag order, so you can't tell. And anyone who discloses receiving such a letter can be sent to prison. FBI field offices issue NSLs on their own in cases that they claim involve international terrorism or clandestine intelligence activities. So here's the IRS. They come along and they say, well, we want to audit George Gordon. So they go over to the FBI and they say, okay, now look, you issue this NSL letter. You go into the bank, get the information, give it to us. And you allege to the bank that this is a terrorist investigation under the Patriot Act. Tell the bank to shut up and don't say a word to George Gordon so that we can get the drop on Gordon. He'll never suspect that we're even investigating it. Isn't that special? Now, you know, our founding fathers gave us something better than that. And it's your government. Of course, your government's in control of the public school system. So these FBI agents, And these IRS agents, they all went to the same public schools that you did, and so they've been taught and trained to be socialists and communists just like you and me and everybody else. So now America has been converted from our former individuals who had rights under our Constitution to a nation of snitches and communist agents and provocateurs. And so now we take our jobs with the FBI or the IRS, or we take our jobs with the Boeing aircraft, etc. And we're all practicing communists over here. And we wonder, well, why is it that things aren't quite the same as they used to be? Well, of course they're not. We are working as hard as we can to destroy our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, our Fourth and Fifth Amendment, and meld the United States into the New World Order of communist utopia. Now, this communism has been tested and tried for thousands of years under different names. And it has never worked in the past. It ain't working now where it's being used. And I doubt seriously that it's going to work in the United States or Canada or Australia. But boys and girls, we're all going to get a chance to see it firsthand. We are all going to get a chance now to reinvent the political wheel. So I just thought I'd pass that one on to you. Now, the NSLs empowered the FBI to seize records on people's earnings, spending, travel, web searches, emails, and telephone calls. So they're doing this looking for terrorists. But if they find a tax cheat in the process, well, then we'll prosecute him for tax cheat. Or any other crime that we can uncover, blackmail or whatever this guy's doing. Now, when we went to public school, they said, well, if you're obeying all the laws and doing all the things you're supposed to do, well, then you got nothing to fear. Well, excuse me. That means that your government has carte blanche to enact laws that can confiscate all of your wealth and you've got nothing to say about it. Because after all, it is the law and you don't have any right to protect your wealth against government intrusion. Remember? Now your head's up the wrong end here again. If you're going to have freedom, you have to have economic freedom. To have economic freedom, you have to have hard money. Once they took our hard money away under House Joint Resolution 192 back in 1933, the game was over. The game was over clear back in the 1930s. Now, there was an opportunity a time or two to reestablish hard money, but Americans have turned it down cold, turned it down. The people that took over the educational system, guys like John Dewey and others, they knew that if they could get control of the minds of Americans from the first grade on, that they'd have us, and they did. Americans have now abandoned the Ten Commandment model, and now we have adopted the Ten Plank model. See? That's where we're at. This doesn't have anything to do with religion. It has to do with economics. It has to do with politics. So we've made our choice. Past tense. It's already done deal. And so now we're witnessing the mopping up operation. And this is what we're in right now. It's just the mopping up operation. And then don't expect government to come along and say, okay, now we've defeated you, now you're a slave. They'll never do that. They're always going to tell you how free you are and how privileged you are to live here in the United States with all this freedom. See how that comes down? And just like they keep telling you about the strong dollar, and we're here to protect your privacy, and we want to cut spending, and we want to cut your taxes, peace when there is no peace. And then the final insult over here, well, you're the freest people in the world, and we want to promote freedom, safety, security. They go on to say here that federal judge Victor Marino ruled that the Patriot Act's NSL provision has the effect of authorizing coercive searches, effectively immune from any judicial process, and the Bush administration is appealing the ruling. The White House hyped the Patriot Act renewal as a political triumph. The Associated Press reported Republicans declared victory as they sought to polish their national security credentials this midterm election year. Remember the Patriot Act, that came from the Republicans. And remember, this latest abortion that they have stuck up our hind ends now, this health care provision, came from the Democrats. Notice that when the Democrats came into power, they didn't repeal the Patriot Act. And when the Republicans come into power, they will not repeal the Health Care Act. These two political parties work in tandem. One of them passes one abortion, and the next one comes in, they pass another abortion, and then they just get one abortion after another. Republicans prattled on about how the revised Patriot Act provides safeguards. Apparently, a safeguard is anything that a government official can mention when asked about possible abuses of federal power. If enough Americans comprehend this Patriot Act charade, it will become far more difficult for the White House and Congress to pull off similar infringements on freedom in the future. At the very least, citizens can still make it hot for anyone in Washington who betrays his oath to uphold the Constitution. James Bovard is author of The Bush Betrayal, as well as Lost Rights, 1994, and Terrorism and Tyranny, Trampling Freedom, Justice and Peace to Rid the World of Evil. This article was originally published in March of 2006. I don't know if you can find it again, but just thought I'd tell you where it's at. Hey, here's another one over here, Illegal Surveillance, a Real Security Threat, also written by this guy named James Bovard. Hey, I'm kind of running overtime here. Let me give you a mid-course reminder here that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. Now that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-profit, non-commercial, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. 67. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, click on the archives page, and download that free general law CD package right there. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, let's take a look at the same author over here, James Bovard. He says, Americans seem to have forgotten why the Founding Fathers prohibited government from spying on them. Public opinion polls show that a rising percentage of Americans approve of the warrantless National Security Agency wiretaps of Americans that Bush has ordered. But such blind faith in government simply ignores the lessons of history. When the feds have unleashed themselves in the past, many innocent Americans and their lives were devastated as a result. During the 60s and 70s, the FBI carried out thousands of counterintelligence programs. Those were called COINTELPRO operations, often combining illegal surveillance with efforts to subvert any opposition to the government. And I told you that story there about the Berkeley cell. That was common. I could recite 20 of those stories to you right off the top of my head. That was during the Vietnam War. Okay. Now, covert FBI efforts sought to incite street warfare between violent groups, wreck marriages, portray innocent people as government informants, sic the IRS on citizens, and cripple or destroy left-wing, black, communist, or other organizations. The FBI inflicted its wrath on speakers, teachers, and writers. A 1976 Senate report noted hundreds of COINTELPRO operations aimed to get university and high school teachers fired, to prevent targets from speaking on campuses, to stop chapters of target groups from being formed, to prevent the distribution of books, newspapers, or periodicals, to disrupt news conferences, to disrupt peaceful demonstrations. The FBI smeared anyone they disapproved of, from Martin Luther King on down. In 1968, the FBI ordered field offices to gather information, illustrating the scurrilous and depraved nature of many of the characters, activities, habits, and living conditions representative of new left adherents. FBI headquarters commanded all FBI agents, every avenue of possible embarrassment must be vigorously and enthusiastically explored. Now, Martin Luther King wasn't one of my favorites. But again, if you're going to throttle one guy, then the FBI can go over here and throttle you or anybody else. And that's what's come down here. And they've been getting away with this, you know, for the last 50 years, so why should they stop now? And Americans are ignorant of it. In fact, they even support it. You go into airports. Anybody that goes into an airport and submits themselves to the kind of indecent exposure that you're being exposed to, you don't care anything about privacy. When you let somebody reach in your pants over there and feel your gonads, you're not somebody that's concerned about privacy and privacy rights. It'd be a cold day in hell when you see me go into an airport. Now, many Americans have shrugged off the recent controversy over illegal wiretaps because they assume that the government would never be concerned with people like themselves. You know, just Joe Sixpack. But the FBI continually expanded its enemies list. Nixon aide Tom Charles Houston testified to Congress about COINTELPRO's tendency to move from the kid with a bomb to the kid with a picket sign, and from the kid with the picket sign to the kid with the bumper sticker of the opposing candidate. And you just keep going down the line. Boundless federal spying on Americans fundamentally changes the relation of the government to the people. The FBI's efforts struck fear not only in average Americans, but also in the members of Congress, who were supposed to oversee and check the FBI's use of its power. The House Majority Leader, Hale Boggs, explained in 1971, freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of action for men in public life can be compromised very effectively by the fear of surveillance as by the fact of surveillance. Other federal agencies also trampled citizens' privacy rights and lives during the late 60s and early 70s. The IRS used COINTELPRO leads to launch audits against thousands of suspected political enemies of the Nixon administration. The U.S. Army set up its own surveillance program, creating files on 100,000 Americans and targeting them, and domestic organizations such as the Young Americans for Freedom, the John Birch Society, and the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. And many of these operations, like the current NSA wiretapping, scorned the Bill of Rights. The Fourth Amendment protects Americans against unreasonable searches and seizures and requires that government agents have a warrant based on probable cause issued by a magistrate, particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized before intruding. The purpose of the Fourth Amendment was to prevent government officials from having dictatorial power over the streets and elsewhere, to restrain the arbitrary power of officials vested with the coercive power of the state. Now, federal judge Gerhard Gessel, in a 1974 ruling on illegal Nixon administration searches, observed, "The American Revolution was sparked in part by the complaints of the colonists against the issuance of writs of assistance, pursuant to which the king's revenue officers conducted unrestricted, indiscriminate searches of persons and homes to uncover contraband." All right, now, boys and girls, let me pause right there. The Patriot Act is a writ of assistance, nothing more, nothing less. Now, we don't call it a writ of assistance. What we call it is the Patriot Act, and it's not for the IRS, and it's not for the government to snoop into your personal private affairs. It's to protect you from terrorists. No, it isn't. That's the cover story, like the strong dollar, protecting people's privacy. We need to cut spending, and we want to cut your taxes, and peace, peace, when there's no peace. Wake up, smell of coffee. Now, unfortunately, the revolutionary spirit now animating Washington is fighting to replace the right to privacy with the right to intrude into that privacy. Now, if Americans permit their rulers to intercept their phone calls and email messages, then is there any abuse that people will not accept from Washington? And I'm going to chime in and say, no, no, no. Not only don't Americans care about the government intruding into their emails and their telephone calls, they don't even care about government intruding into your pants and feeling your testicles, boys, or your breasts, girls. And you submit to it every day when you go into the airport, don't you? It would seem like to me that some guy reaching down your pants would be far more intrusive than somebody reading your emails. Now, does the fact that someone works for the government automatically entitle him to know what his neighbors are saying and thinking? If Americans permit the feds to exempt themselves from the law, then the only freedom left in this country will be freedom to obey and freedom to applaud politicians no matter what the politicians may say or do. Illegal wiretaps will pave the way for other government crimes. The more information government gathers on people, the more power it will have over them. The more expansive the secretive government intrusions become, the easier it becomes for government to rule by fear. Again, it's written by James Bovard. I don't have a date on that. Let's see where this comes from. It's called, look at this, the Future of Freedom Foundation, FFF, Freedom of Future Foundation, FFF at FFF.org. Their website is www.fff.org. And what's more, that's www.fff.org. Pretty good article, I thought. I think the guy's right on point. And he's telling it like it is. That's where reality is located. Now there's another article here. I'll get started on it. We'll take it up next time. It's written by Anthony Gregory, same outfit, FFF, the Future of Freedom Foundation. He says the right of the people to be secure in their person, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. So our founding fathers did not leave crime a carte blanche card. Government has the power to search your house, but in order to do that, there has to be a reasonable suspicion that something's going on there. So, for instance, if I were to go to the police and say, I think that this guy over here has got a meth lab operating. Why do you think that? Well, because I was out in his barn and I smelled this god-awful odor out there, and I heard that places that are at the end of dead-end roads and have this god-awful smell are typically places for meth labs. Well, the sheriff would take that information from me, Joe Q. Citizen. He'd go down to the local prosecutor, and then he would seek a warrant the prosecutor would go into a judge and say, hey, listen, the sheriff here thinks that there's a meth lab operating here at the end of 609 or 608 or something, and we'd like to go take a look at that. Well, what's the probable cause? Well, it's a strong odor that this man smelled. So the judge would call me into what's known as an in-camera inspection or hearing, and he would question me and say, well, what is the smell you're hearing? You're smelling, and I'd tell him. And then the judge would make an evaluation. Well, yeah, that does sound like a meth lab. Or no, I don't think it does. You need more evidence. You've got to have more information. So if the judge says more information, then the sheriff might start watching this guy to see if he's going into the drugstore to buy stuff that might be used in meth. And so then after securing from the druggist, yeah, the guy comes in every week and he buys up all the pseudoephedrine that we've got in the store. Now, would that tip the scales? And pretty soon the judge, you know, when he sees enough information here, he'll say, yeah, I'll issue a warrant. I think there's enough probable cause here to believe that there's a crime going on. So he issues the warrant. The sheriff goes out, searches the guy's place, and yeah, there's a god-awful, terrible smell, but it's not a meth lab. It's the pigs up behind the barn, and yeah, he's taking Sudafed because he's got bad health and he's had a lot of colds lately and blah, blah, blah. And well, we're sorry as hell that we intruded, but hey, listen, while they're there searching, they find that there's an illegal gun in the barn. They can't use that against him. They find that there's some other information. They find his tax records. You can't use that against him. You have to particularly describe what it is you're looking for. We're looking for a meth lab, not a tax protester. We're looking for a meth lab, not illegal guns. See how simple that is? And that protects that man from just a random search. Because, boys and girls, if I had a warrant, if I could come into your house, I can find a crime. If I can get into your house, I can find a crime. I'll find something wrong. Could be a building violation. Hey, boys and girls, all of us are guilty of something. But the government ought not to have carte blanche to come in and look for that something so that they've got a customer to charge with a crime. So that's the way that game has to be played. This is called the Future of Freedom Foundation. I'll take it up right there next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Meanwhile, let me remind you that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, there's the signal. Says my time's up. I've got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.